Recording has started.
Thank you, Irene. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the IGO-NGO Curative Right Protection PDP Working Group call on the 29th of April 2015. On the call today, we have Petter Reinforth, George Kirikus, David Marr, Jade Chapman, Mason Cole, Paul Tattersfield, Paul Keating, Phil Corwin, Christine Duane, Laurie Shulman, Gary Campbell, and Kathy Kleiman. We have received an apology from Osvaldo Novoa, and from staff we have Mary Wong, Steve Chan, and myself, Natalie Peregrine. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Phil.
Thank you. This is Phil Corwin. I'm co-chair of this esteemed group, and I'll be leading the discussion today. We've had the roll call. Are there any updates to statements of interest? Hearing none, let's proceed.
Yes, Phil? Phil,
yes.
It's Lori.
Oh. Yes,
Lori. I updated my statement of interest. As you know, I've changed my affiliation. I'm no longer with ASCD. I am now Senior Director of Internet Policy for the International Trademark Association.
Well, congratulations, and we welcome your continued participation.
Thank you. Big change.
Yes. So I'll be seeing you in San Diego in a few days in your new new guise.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. All right, we're going to review past GAC advice regarding IGA names and acronyms, which is just background. We are told that the receipt of a GAC response to the questions we sent to both them and the IGO group, that at least from the GAC, its receipt is imminent. We don't have it to discuss on today's call, but we expect it to be available for the next one. The purpose of this, and we're going to get into, is to get some background here on where the GAC has been, because besides substantive legal analysis, we have to deal to some extent with ICANN internal politics and framing whatever our final recommendations are. When we get to the final part of this meeting, which is about next steps and next meeting, we can discuss what to do about the fact that we've been somewhat, after making really very good progress at a good pace for most of this working group's existence, we've kind of bogged down primarily because we haven't had these responses from the GAC and IGO, and we haven't had legal advice on the current status of IGO sovereign immunity that we felt was reliable. So we can discuss how to deal with that at the end of the call and what we should be doing between now and the Buenos Aires meeting. But having stated that, we're going to proceed through this compilation prepared by staff of prior GAC advice on protection of IGO names and acronyms, and then we're going to get an update from the staff on what's going on in the discussions between the GAC and the GNSO and I guess some part of the board regarding some IGO issues that are not the direct focus of our work, but are related to new TLDs.
Phil, sorry.
Yeah, who's that?
Phil, can I thought you were finished. It's Jim Bykoff.
Who's speaking?
Jim Bykoff, for the record.
Okay, thank you, Jim.
Procedural note, while we don't have any responses yet, I think next week, as you probably know, many people will be at the INTA meeting in San Diego, which means that I know myself, David Heasley, will not be available next Wednesday. I'm hoping that we can skip a week since we don't have any responses yet, and I think a lot of people, probably quite a few on the call, will be at the intermeeting.
Yes, and Jim, I'm going to be there, and Mary's going to be there, and I believe Petter will be there. So we did not plan to have a call next week. We can assure you that we definitely will not be having a working group call on May 6th next Wednesday, because I know Tuesday is Cinco de Mayo in San
right,
Diego.
So we'll be out
and other places that celebrate that holiday. So rest assured, no call next week.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So let's go through this to glean whatever we can. Going back to April 2012, the GAC considered the board's request for policy advice on protections to include IGOs and said that advises that in the event additional IGOs are found to meet the above criteria, and we don't have the criteria in this compilation, this would be a consideration of formulation of GAC advice for IGO protections in future rounds of new TLD program, as well as consideration of more general protections. Therefore, the GAC advised that no additional protection should be afforded to IGOs beyond the current protections in the applicant guidebook. So at least in April 2012, the GAC was satisfied with the protections contained for IGOs in the whatever version of the applicant guidebook was current at that time. As I go through these, if anyone wants to comment on any one of them, you know, just raise your hand in the chat room, or I'll stop briefly for the. I think, for example, Jim is not in the chat room, so I'll just stop at the end of each in case someone wants to comment. October 2012 in Toronto, the GAC continued its deliberations on the protections of names and acronyms of IGOs. I know this is interesting. All these communications relate to IGOs, not INGOs, which to some extent confirms our earlier decision to drop them from the scope of our work. And then the GAC advised the ICANN board that implementation of such protections at the second level must be accomplished prior to the delegation of any new TLDs, and in the future rounds at the second and top level. So second level, first round, second and top, all subsequent rounds. They believe that the current criteria for registration under the .int top-level domain as a basis for an IGO to file a legal rights objection provides a starting basis for protecting IGO names and acronyms in all TLDs. Well, there's a place we differ. We concluded that eligibility for a .int registration was not sufficient, not going to be sufficient for standing in the UDRP or URS or any new CRP. And, in fact, we asked the council and received from council a change in our charter to reflect that decision, and that's been approved. So that's a difference with the GAC for sure. And finally, building on these criteria, GAC and IGOs will collaborate to develop a list of the names and acronyms that should be protected. And I guess that's the one, the broader list we've been working off, or at least referencing. Pending further work with ICANN, GAC believes this list of IGOs should be approved for interim protections through a moratorium against third-party registration prior to the delegation of new TLDs. Mary, a point of information, Mary, that moratorium they requested, was that ever granted? Is that what they're still discussing now, even though half the new TLDs have been delegated?
Phil, this is Mary from staff. I believe this refers to the interim protections that the board did grant for at least a second level in the new GTLDs. And as George noted in the chat, that's the reserve list at the second level, which I believe is now in Spec 5 of the new GTLD registry agreement.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments? If not, I'll move on to Beijing, which was a big meeting for GAC advice on the new TLD program. So the GAC stressed that IGOs perform an important global public mission and that their names and acronyms warrant special protection in an expanded DNS. They said IGOs are in an objectively different category to other rights holders, warranting special protection by ICANN and the DNS. They're mindful of outstanding implementation issues, and the GAC reiterates its advice to the ICANN board that appropriate preventive initial protection for IGO names and acronyms be in place. So they were reiterating there. And then in July, let me stop there. Any comments? All right. Continuing in our time travel here, back to July 2013, the Durban communique. The GAC reaffirmed its previous advice from Toronto and Beijing that IGOs are an objectively different category. They understand that the ICANN board is prepared to fully implement GAC advice, but an outstanding matter to be finalized is the practical and effective implementation of the permanent preventive protections of IGO acronyms. And the GAC further advised the ICANN board that the GAC is interested to work with IGOs and NGPC on a complementary cost-neutral mechanism that would provide notification to an IGO if a potential registrant seeks to register a domain name matching an acronym at the second level and allows for an independent third party to review any such registration request. And initial protections confirmed by the NGPC at its July 2nd, 2013 meeting should remain in place. The notification procedure that the GAC requested here regarding acronyms, let me turn again to Mary. Was that ever implemented?
I'm sorry, Phil, which?
In which? C1A, the GAC asked for a complementary cost-neutral mechanism to provide notification to IGOs if someone tried to register their acronyms at the second level.
I believe that is still under discussion, and we can talk more to this on agenda item 2, but that is part of the discussion for the preventative protections.
Okay, that's what I thought. So that was requested in July 2013 as we moved toward the Buenos Aires meeting in June 2015, almost 2 years later. That's still on the table, that request. Okay.
And that's right.
Okay, proceeding to Buenos Aires, the last Buenos Aires meeting, and we didn't expect to be back so soon, but we are.
Phil, I think Lori has her hand up.
Oh.
I'm not sure if that was for the July communique or something emanating from there.
Whatever it's for, we're delighted to hear from Lori. Go ahead. We're not hearing you, Lori. Are you on mute? I'm not hearing from Lori. She's going to type her question. Apparently she's having difficulty with the audio. Emulating Paul Keating's, as noted in chat room. Well, why don't I proceed through the Buenos Aires while Lori is typing, and then we'll get back to whatever question she has or comment. At the last Buenos Aires meeting, the GAC advised the board that it, together with the IGOs, remain committed to continuing the dialogue with the new GTLD program committee on finalizing modalities for permanent protection of IGO acronyms at the second level. To put in place a mechanism would provide for a permanent system of notifications about acronym registrations, allow for time of response, allow for a final and binding determination by an independent third party, and be at no cost or nominal cost only to the IGO. I do want to note here, it's not the same as what we're talking about, which is, or though it's related, they are looking for some kind of binding determination, which could be an arbitration procedure. You know, I don't know any other model for that. To when someone registers an acronym at the second level. That relates to whatever our final recommendation is going to be on what has to be shown to recover or suspend a domain that accords to an acronym. And, you know, for example, if you're the World Health Organization or somebody has WHO in their domain name, do you always win, or does it depend on how the domain is being used? We're going to be getting back to that question. So, okay, Lori pasted a link to a letter. Let's see what that... should we take a look at that? Maybe we'll take a look at that.
Bill?
Yes.
Jim Bykoff. How does... the acronym issue is not... I don't think it's within the scope of our group, is it? Some other group's working on that. I think that's the group that's considering... that's been considering for some years now whether acronyms of IGOs should be protected at the second level.
Mary, does that, our charter for this group, does it include just exact matches of names, or does it include acronyms as well? I thought acronyms were within our scope.
Hi, Phil. Hi, Jim. This is Mary. It does include acronyms. I think the distinction is between the sort of preventative protection that the earlier group and the current GAC and board dialogue is about and what we're doing on curative rights. But in terms of the scope of names and acronyms, it is similar.
Right. So there's some overlap there. I'm going to suggest we finish going through the GAC advice here, move on to the last page, and then take a look at that letter that Lori brought to our attention and see how it relates to our work. So moving to the March 24, 2014 Singapore meeting. This is a short one where the GAC recalled what it had previously said in Toronto, Beijing, Durban, and Buenos Aires, and awaits the board's response. So this was just kind of a poking the board in the ribs and asking when they're going to get a response. Moving forward to June 2014, GAC again affirming all of its prior advice on IGOs and acronyms at the top and second level. Notes that the NGPC's letter of 16 June 2014 concerning further steps. Well, they noted it, but expressed concern that the process of implementing their advice has been so protracted. And they welcome the NGP's assurance that interim protections remain in place pending the final outcome of the process. And they confirm their willingness to work with the GNSO. So moving on to Los Angeles, October. And, Lori, I don't know if you had a... comment here, your hand is still up, or if not, just lower your hand. I don't know if your audio is working now, but I see your hand still up. Now it's down. Okay, moving on to the October 2014. This is a long communique from L.A., and I think we took note of this at the time it happened. We were up and running at the time this was given. Okay, and they reminded the board that notice of a match to an IGO name or an acronym to prospective registrants and to the IGO should apply in perpetuity at no cost to IGOs. I assume that's under the trademark claims notice procedure. And concerning curative protections at the second level and noting the ongoing GNSE PDP, on access to curative rights protection mechanisms, that's us. The GAC reminded the ICANN board that any such mechanism should be at no or nominal cost and that in further in implementing such mechanism, the UDRP should not be amended, and they welcome the continued protections that were in place, and they wanted the board and the NGPC and the GNSO to develop concrete solutions. This was the communique that sparked the questions that we sent to the GAC to a very large extent, and as I said, we expect a response fairly imminent. And this brings us to the end in the most recent ICANN meeting, where the GAC said they continue to work with interested parties to reach agreement on appropriate permanent protections for names and acronyms for IGOs, including working with our working group. So a consistent pattern of the GAC wanting permanent protections for the names and acronyms of IGOs at the top and second level. Happy to some extent with what was done for the first round of new TLDs, but not satisfied with the that a more sweeping decisions have not been made and implemented. And I see a question from Paul. Can we please review the interim protections that are in place? I'm going to turn to Mary or Steve for that if they have that information available, because I'm not sure I know it all by heart.
Phil, this is Mary, and Barry and myself worked on some of that implementation. So the first thing we want to emphasize is, as Paul noted, these are interim protections, and going through the background with the GAC communiques, you can trace that to the references to the board actions through their resolutions to give these interim protections. As George previously noted and pasted in the Adobe chat, you can see the actual IGO names and acronyms that are part of these interim protections in an XML list, and essentially they include the names and the acronyms of the IGOs from the GAC list that was given to ICANN in, I believe, April 2013. Obviously, the emphasis here is that they are interim. That also means, however, that they are in place until a permanent solution is found, and we can talk about this more under agenda item number 2. And so there may ultimately be a difference between what's on the interim list now and what's on the permanent list. I hope this helps.
Right, and as to what those protections are, well, what are they? Are all these names borrowed from that? We're not talking about top level protections. Are we talking about their?
No, they are second level reservations.
Level, or do they generate a trademark claims notice when registered at the second level?
They are withheld from registration at the second level by the registries in the new GTLD program.
Okay, so it's they don't need a curative rights protection for any of these because they're not going to be registered in the first place.
That's correct.
Okay. Hopefully that answered Paul's question. Let me turn briefly. I don't know if any of you clicked on the link that Lori provided, but this is a very recent letter to Dr. Crocker, chair of the ICANN board, dated 23rd of April, so just 6 days ago. And from Thomas Schneider, chair of the GAC. It's a short letter, says GAC members have noted with concern requests of new TLD registry operators for the release of country and territory names following the use of the RSEP process. And letter goes on, as a sensitive member for GAC, sensitive matter for GAC members, as highlighted at the in the Singapore communique. And it says the GAC has started to work on a proposal for such a database of country and territory names, and it'll soon be shared with ICANN. And in the meantime, it's the expectation of the GAC that a realistic timetable will be followed and that existing RSEP requests will not be approved before an adequate process involving the GAC and individual governments on release of country and territory names. I believe those requests from registries, a lot of them involve brand registries. I think there may be some others involved, but it's about allowing registrants to have geographic identifiers in second-level domain names. I don't know of any similar request from any registry to allow for the release for registration of any of the names on that IOC Red Cross and IGO reserve names for new TLD. So I'm not sure this letter is really relevant to our work in that it lets us know about another area of GAC concern, but there's nothing similar going on for IGOs. And I believe that's I am correct in that, right, Mary, that there's no similar requests have been made for any IGO names?
Phil, I don't know that firsthand. I believe that's correct, but I think what the working group might be interested to know as well is that the issue of country and territory names is something that a separate GNSO working group, or actually it's a cross-community working group, I correct myself, is looking at, and there is some further background to this issue because the GAC has a subgroup that's working on the issue as well. So there are certain sensitivities that may be somewhat similar at a general level with some of the sensitivities we're dealing with here, but at first glance, I think the staff note would be that this is something that we can note, but it probably would not be pertinent to our working group at this point.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. That's what I was thinking. So we've now concluded our review of all the GAC advice going back to spring of 2012, 3 years ago. So does anyone want to discuss any of that further before we move on to our next agenda topic? Okay. And Mary, is your hand up to say something about this?
It is, actually. And just to note that I hope this exercise has been as useful for the group as it has been for the staff, just trying to get a placeholder on where we are. We would note that the tenor of a lot of the communiques have been on overall protections for the IGOs, and most of the specifics have focused on what we have come to call preventative-type protections, and we're going to come to that in a sec, Phil, I know. On the curative side, we would note that there is an issue, Phil, as you also commented on, in terms of the what we're calling the standing requirement, but in essentially what the GAC has called the starting point as well. I think that was in the 2013 communiques. And this group has talked somewhat about the use of the .int criteria. What I did want to let the working group know is that in our coordination with colleagues that support the GAC and in our communications on behalf of you all and the co-chairs to the IGOs, we've been very careful to say that, we're talking very specifically about standing as in, what would allow an IGO to essentially file a claim. That is not the be-all and end-all of everything, and that doesn't preclude, any of the other substantive considerations that have to go into any sort of process. So since the GAC did mention that in an early communique, I thought it would be useful to have the clarification on the record. And secondly, and I'll end after this, that if you look at the recent Los Angeles communique, that is probably one of the few places where the GAC has been very specific on curative rights protections under A Part 2, where they note our ongoing PDP. And in terms of the cost issue and other advice, that the UDRP should not be amended, for example. This is exactly the point of engagement that our working group is trying to have with the GAC to which they are expected to respond. So, Phil, that's my summary. Thanks.
Okay. And just to further clarify, correct me if I'm wrong, but if looking again at this I guess it's July 3rd, 2013. I never understand how they, if they did this way of dating things that other people use, whether it's the month or the year first. I mean, the day or the month first, correct? But anyway, there's a list that Lori alerted us to, not that Lori, but that George alerted us to. If there are names on there that are there simply because they're .int registered names or eligible for .int, nothing we're doing would take them off that list. We're only, our work relates only to what we believe are the substantive legal rights required to have standing in the UDRP URS or some new arbitration process. So nothing we do would knock anybody off that reserved list. What we're talking about is after the fact access to arbitration procedures when something's been registered that the IGO believes should not have been registered.
Phil, if that's for me, I think that's right, that we're focused on a specific issue with regard to a specific purpose on the curative rights process. And so in terms of what's on the interim list and what those interim protections are, that's correct.
Okay. Let's move on to agenda item 3, which is to review the status of GNSO work concerning preventative and CRP for IGO names and acronyms. It says staff will update, so staff, please update us.
And hello, it's Mary again. I note that Barry is on the call, and I said he's worked on the earlier PDP as well as the ongoing implementation of some of the adopted recommendations from that. And in essence, this agenda item follows from the first, and I think that we've already covered some of the intended updates in the chat and in some of the questions that were raised. We just wanted to remind the working group that very generally there's the preventative piece and the curative piece, and we're working on the latter piece. The connection, of course, is that the preventative piece at this point, if you look at the GAC advice, for example, talking about notices to IGOs about a potential registration, that uses the trademark clearinghouse. So in terms of the duration and nature of that kind of preventative protection, the question that an IGO might raise would be the efficacy of having that kind of protection and receiving that kind of notice if it is not reflected by a corresponding effectiveness on the curative rights side. So to that extent, our work does have an effect on and relate to the ongoing preventative discussions, which is another reason why we thought it might be helpful to do a bit of a status update. There's not that much to update. I don't know if that's good news or not to everybody. A few weeks ago, we talked about where those discussions seem to be. And as a reminder, those discussions are between the board's new GTLD program committee, who are acting in this matter on behalf of the board, the GAC, and of course that also includes the IGOs. And my understanding is that the IGOs are represented by the same small group to a large extent as have been interacting with us, and of course the GNSO, because the prior PDP that we're all aware of did contain certain recommendations, some of which are inconsistent with GAC advice on this topic. So there was a letter, and I know we brought this to the working group's attention, from the NGPC to the GAC in January asking for further GAC clarification. Phil, you and others then know that the GNSO does not believe it's in a position to change any of its recommendations with regard to preventative protection for IGOs unless and until there's some clarity from the GAC and the NGPC. And so in that sense, that's where we are. The discussions continue. Therefore, and this goes back to Paul's question on agenda item number one, those interim protections that are based on the GAC list from 2013, which Phil, as you noted, are in turn based on the .int criteria, those interim protections for the IGOs whose names and acronyms are on that list will continue until that is sorted out. Our understanding is that there is a desire on all parts and parties to sort this out within the next few months. Phil, as you noted, this has been going on for a while. So we are hopeful that the Buenos Aires meeting will see some further progress on this. We thought it would be helpful for the working group to know where things are and to know or be reminded at least of where our work sort of feeds into the bigger picture.
Yeah.
I can go into more specifics, still, well, but no,
actually,
that's the thing we should stop.
I wanted to ask a question about how the existing protections in new TLDs work. I'm looking at the list here, and, for example, the Economic Cooperation Organization, their full name is listed on that list, but also their acronym, which is ECO, which is ECO, which has a strong meaning in the ecology, recycling, Earth Day community. If someone goes to register eco.anynewTLD, are they blocked from registering that, or they just get a trademark claims notice that it's a registered term and they're proceeding at their own risk? I'm trying to ask, how does the current protection actually work? Is this a blocking list, or just a generation of trademark claims notice list? And if it's the latter, does that just operate during the first 90 days of general availability as a requirement?
Phil, this is Mary, and I will defer to others who are more involved with or knowledgeable about the implementation of this interim list. My understanding is that by requiring that these names and acronyms be withheld from registration at the registry level, that it operates as a block at the moment.
Okay.
So no trademark claims or anything like that.
So it's a block list. You wouldn't get a claims notice. You would get an advisory from the registry or the registrar that that name is just not available.
Yeah, I don't know what the actual notice form or timing would look like, but yes, it would not be available for registration.
Okay, okay. All right, this brings us to, I think we're done with item three, unless anyone has any further comments or questions on it. And which is... discuss possible options with regard to our chartered purposes based on our prior discussions. That's it. So, and that ties into next steps, next meeting. I think I share the frustration of many members of the working group that after making very rapid progress, we've gotten somewhat bogged down. And I think we're waiting on three things, response from the GAC, which we're told is imminent, response from the IGO, so at least we can take their, even if we don't agree with the viewpoint of either of those groups, we at least know where they're coming from at this point in time, and getting a sounder legal foundation in the current accepted views on what the scope of sovereign immunity for IGOs is in the second decade of the 21st century, because I think everything left for us to do depends on whether that sovereign immunity is absolute, which is doubtful, but we don't have a firm basis for drawing that conclusion, or whether it's limited. If it's limited, we need to understand in what ways it's limited and how they relate to what we're discussing. So I'm going to open this up now to any comments on how we can... while we're waiting for the GAC and IGOs to respond, what we can do to get that last component or anything that anyone else thinks needs to be done so that this group can move toward a final report and recommendations in as timely a fashion as possible. I don't think any of us want to be here in April 2016 discussing these same issues.
Phil?
Is that Jim?
Yeah. I was just going to say, going into the details on these issues, really, it seems to me that we should have at least some response from one of the two groups before we discuss possible solutions, because depending on the responses, I mean, we may be just wasting a lot of time.
Oh, I agree. I agree, Jim, but the problem is we just don't know. Again, we believe the GAC response is imminent. That's what we're told. We don't know when we're going to get anything from the IGOs, and sometimes the responses we get from those groups are not exactly crystal clear, or they kind of answer the – sometimes they answer the question they thought we should have asked rather than the question we did ask. So we may wait for those and still not still have some significant gray areas.
But to talk about whether we should amend the UDRP or whether we should have a new process, aren't those issues really going to be dependent on what specifically the other two groups say to us?
Yeah, certainly that's going to be an important component in my opinion, but I'm co-chairing this group. It's the consensus within the working group that's going to decide our final work product.
Okay. Thanks.
But I think what I'm asking is while we're waiting for those responses, what else can we be doing or should we be doing to bring in information we need to form a solid basis for our final recommendations? And that's open to the floor.
Still,
Paul's hand. I saw Paul's hand up, but now it's gone.
I think he typed his question in the chat.
Right. And the question is, what can we do to move forward on legal advice? And, you know, I think we need to find a reliable source to advise us on what the consensus prevailing view is within the international law legal community on, to the extent there is one, on the scope of sovereign immunity for IGOs, because that, I think, is the critical issue. Let me back up a minute. We've decided we're not. There's no need for any special process for INGOs. They're out of our consideration. We decided that the IGOs, we believe they already have standing for UDRP and URS purposes if they've asserted their rights under Article 6 tier, and that we can either convey that opinion or suggest a minor amendment of the of those existing rights processes to make it clear that they have standing, and it might there also might need to be some additional guidance as to when, for want of a better word, infringement of their purposes is going on at the domain, and looking toward the Article 6 tier language on that. Beyond that, I think the last issue relates to appeal. Where a IGO would prevail in a UDRP or URS, and the losing registrant would want to appeal to a court of national jurisdiction, and that's where we need to understand the sovereign immunity. And I see Lori has a hand up, and then Petter, so let's hear from them. Lori?
Hi, it's Lori. Can you hear? Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Can you hear me? Good. Okay. I have a new headset. I apologize. I had typed my question into the chat, but I'll ask it live so we can talk about it a little bit. My idea is, if we don't have money for an attorney, wouldn't this be a great subject for a team of law students, advanced law students, maybe some of the international law clinics here in D.C., not the clinics, but the teams here in D.C. or maybe somewhere else. It's just a thought. To get that legal survey done.
Phil, this is Mary. Can I jump in?
Please.
And this is to respond in some way to Lori and also to Paul in the chat. Typically, my understanding as to what we do within staff is that we would refer this matter first to our legal department because they do coordinate legal advice and responses. There may be a question as to who or what might be the most appropriate type of expertise to use. In this particular group, I think one thing we had talked about was an international law academic with expertise and experience working with IGOs. So there's quite a lot of esteemed jurists and international law professors who could fill that role. Obviously, at this point, I don't know how much that would cost, but we would not necessarily, George, go to Jones Day. But this is something that Steve and I would propose we go to our colleagues in legal with first, because that seems to me to be the customary practice, and then we can probably figure out the timing and the cost from our discussions with them.
Yeah, I think that would be very helpful, because again, that's the biggest impediment right now to completing our work, because we can't make any decision regarding appeals until we know what the consensus view is on the scope of sovereign immunity. If there's expertise in ICANN's in-house legal department, I'd be surprised if there was to give us a high degree of confidence, but let's find out, and if there isn't, let's find out what available avenues, and I agree with Paul's comment that the question should be framed by us, that is the members of the working group. Petter, your hand's been up, and let's hear from you.
Thanks, Petter. May I just echo that I think it's a good idea to have a sovereign immunity expert, and obviously we'll then choose a new one from what we used in the other expert report we had. If it's possible, I also think it's more time-consuming to have a pure legal expert on this topic, even if it's, of course, it's wonderful with a group of students that can do this kind of work. But I feel that for two reasons, we need a rather quick reply to not lose more time on this topic, and we also need something that we can safely refer to, and that's why I think that it's better to have a traditional legal expert on this. So that's one step forward that we can do start with quite directly, if we can agree on that. The other thing is that I truly think that we will have some response, especially if we skip the meeting next week and take our next meeting within 2 weeks, that we will have some response from GAC, and whatever that response will be, even if it's very not so deep in details, but still we will then have something that we can refer to as their point of views. So, yes, I agree that we have found ourselves being standing on the same place for a while now, but I think that within the next upcoming weeks, with this combination, we can find a way to move forward. Thanks.
Yeah, now, I agree. And further on that, I think if we can identify a someone who has good expertise in the field of sovereign immunity and international law, that it's, we're not talking about a lot of hours to generate the kind of response we need. They're going to know. They're going to know it. They're going to know if there's a what the current views are on sovereign immunity for IGOs, and be able to. They may already have it in a law review article or some other work they've done, but I don't think we're talking about that it would take an expert in this field much time to respond to the question that we have. So I don't see this as a major expense, and it's, but it is a critical input that's needed to complete this working group's work. So, Mary, you're going to make inquiry on that, and whenever we have our next meeting or prior, you're going to be able to report back on us on what can be done in that area. Is that correct?
Hi, Phil and everyone. Yes, that's correct. We'll try and get that sort of answer as soon as we possibly can. And I just wanted to say that obviously we did do some initial research which shows that there's not a single rule when it comes to IGO privileges and immunity. So it would be helpful, I suppose, to have that expanded on or confirmed in some way. I wanted to get back a little bit to Jim's earlier question with regard to our discussion right now, and I think it, we've come some way in our discussions the last few months, and you know, clearly we've done a lot of work on standing. We have done a lot of preliminary work on the immunity question. So our thinking here was that, you know, not that we can really set those aside, but those are questions that would arise whether we are talking about amending the existing processes or creating a new one. So in other words, you know, that's sort of a continuing question. So one question for the group to consider is, you know, whether irrespective of those continuing questions, whether there are other considerations that the group should be taking on board when it does come to thinking about the various options that we might recommend, including, as George reminded us on the list, that it may be no recommendation or no change at all.
Sure, sure. Yeah, we're not prejudicing our final conclusions in any way with these explorations. And noting in the chat, George did note, and I take note of that, that we've seen instances in which IGOs have used the UDRP and thereby implicitly submitted to its rules, including the possibility of appeal. And and Lori said she knows someone who might have some expertise in this. And yeah, we get you know, we get more than one opinion. That's fine too. I don't think we can look to retain an expert, but if there's other experts out there who can contribute something, it would be foolish not to take advantage of that. So I'd have no objection to Lori looking into that possibility. So we're coming up 2 minutes to the hour, so I'm going to open the floor if anyone has any final remarks. Otherwise, I think we've made some progress here. We know we're waiting on the GAC and the IGOs. We appear to have a consensus that we need some outside legal input from an expert in international law and sovereign immunity from IGOs. We are not going to have a call next week on May 6th because many of us in this working group will be at the International Trademark Association annual meeting in San Diego, and but we will have at least one or two more calls between this call and the meeting in Buenos Aires, and depending on what the GAC says, we may be seeking to have some type of interaction with them in Buenos Aires to get further clarification. So does anyone else have anything they want to say before we conclude this call at 12:59 p.m. Eastern? I don't see any hands up or hear anyone, so I'm going to conclude the call. Thank you all for your participation, and look forward to speaking again in May, and hopefully on the basis of some input we received between now and then.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you, Reese. I'll stop the recording. Have a good day.